All of his work can be read at brownszone.com, where the headline story, Clint Kubiak to interview for offensive coordinator job today. It's our buddy Scott Patrack. Hello, Scott.
What's going on?
Well, we're sitting here solving the problems of the National Football League and the Cleveland Browns in particular, and we'd like you to help.
That'll keep you busy.
That might be the best line you've ever had. That was really good. Okay, so Clint Kubiak today, son of Gary Kubiak, mentor to Kevin Stefanski. Daryl Bevel's in this thing. Daryl's mid-50s. Former OC in Minnesota when Kevin was on the staff there and has a Super Bowl ring from Seattle. And Tommy Rees is the boy wonder who Nick Saban loves, who was tight ends coach this year. One of those three, your new offensive coordinator? And if so, which one? And if not, which? Yeah, who is it?
Yeah, I would certainly think it's one of those three guys. I'd probably go Kubiak, Rees, Bevel. And the reason I say that is, I think we talked last week about the desire from at least Joe Bitonio and Jack Conklin, and probably even more than that, to go back to that wide zone run scheme married with the play action pass that we saw Stefanski do in 2020, 2021, before they got away from it a little bit. And obviously, Clint Kubiak grew up with that system, right? It's the Gary Kubiak system, the Mike Shanahan system, that Kevin Stefanski really got acquainted with in 2019 when he was coordinator with the Vikings. Gary Kubiak was there. So was Clint. And I just think it makes a ton of sense if you're going to go back to that system and major in that to bring in a guy that's so good at that. And that's what Clint would be. So that's why I would give him the edge. I'm sure they love Tommy Rees. I know he's an up-and-comer. He's only 32 years old. But he hasn't really been in that system per se. He called plays at Notre Dame, he called plays at Alabama. But I just think there's something about Clint Kubiak, their shared history, that could really help get this offense back to where it needs to be.
What are they looking for? They brought in Dorsey last year. I don't know what they were looking. They let AVP go. Why did they let him go? And so where? What's the perfect resume? Are they looking for, Robin to Batman when it comes to Kevin?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry and really the whole organization likes to be diverse and likes to have all these different schools of thought. And that's something that Kevin Stefanski has really been forward about and upfront about. And even when he hired AVP to be his coordinator, AVP had spent time with Green Bay, spent time with Cincinnati. He didn't necessarily have the same background as Kevin did. So you draw from this, you draw from Bill Callahan comes in. And I think there's a lot of benefits from that. So I don't know if there's just one specific trait that Kevin's looking for. I think if he finds a really smart guy that has new and interesting ideas, he'll figure out a way to incorporate that into the offense. Having said that, I do think the familiarity with a guy like Clint Kubiak helps, especially when you're coming off 3-14 and you had the worst scoring offense in the league and you're trying to kind of go back to your fundamentals. At least I think they should try to go back to those fundamentals. I think that makes sense. The Ken Dorsey hire last year was because they were trying to maximize Deshaun Watson, and it was about going pass heavy. It was RPOs. It was more shotgun, more quarterback runs. Like, that was the reason for what was really an abrupt change from a guy like AVP, who they'd gotten together and, after 4 years, they were on the same page. They were running that, the play action scheme. That was a huge departure, but it was all for Deshaun Watson. And obviously Watson's not number one in the equation now. And I think it'll be more about system than one guy. And again, that's what would lead me to Kubiak. I mean, I don't think it's a done deal with Kubiak, but that's why, to me, he would be the favorite.
If you bring in Kubiak, and let's just say he's the guy, yeah, does it lean you any which way about a quarterback? And Kirk Cousins is obviously the name that comes to mind.
Sure. I mean, they both coached Kirk Cousins. So that would I mean, I think it's easy to connect those dots.
Yep.
I think when you look at how this quarterback room is going to be put together, and I'm under the assumption it's at least one veteran and a rookie, you know, possibly at number two or at least somewhere in the top, whatever, you know, top rounds of the draft. I don't know if it'll be a number two or not. But I think you have to go young, a combination of young and older. And we know we expect Cousins to be released. We expect it to be a really cheap contract. It just makes a lot of sense to me. And I think the familiarity, if anybody's going to get Kirk Cousins to be the Kirk Cousins he was a few years ago, it would be the guys that coached him a few years ago, where he had a couple of his best seasons in the NFL with Kevin as a play caller in 2019, and Clint was there with them. So that makes a lot of sense to me. I think it's easy to figure that out. Now, if you go Bevel, you know, Russell Wilson could be a free agent, and he won a Super Bowl with Russell Wilson. So, yeah. You know, I don't know if I don't think you can make that coordinator decision based solely on that, because just coordinator decision is going to come 2 months or whatever, a month and a half before free agency. And I don't know if the Browns can say for sure that they can get Kirk Cousins or that Russell Wilson will be available. So I think you have to make it independent, but you can certainly go, okay, here's a couple options, and can these guys, these coordinators, fit with these quarterbacks that are high on the option list for the Browns?
Scott, Jeff and I were talking about the running back situation for next year, and I mean, just as I was saying to Jeff, my thought was, Nick comes back, try to figure that out. I don't have any problem bringing back Jerome Ford, draft a guy, and then maybe bring in a veteran. What do you see the running back room looking like next year, if you could look into your crystal ball?
Yeah, man, I spent a lot of time thinking about that yesterday, watching some of those running backs, right? Saquon.
Yeah.
Josh Jacobs was so good. I know Green Bay lost, but he was so good yesterday, and he had a huge year for them.
Four of the five winners had a 100-yard rushing game from a running back.
Right. You know, Cook had a ton of touchdowns for Buffalo this season. I don't think there's any way that they go out and spend a bunch of money on a free agent running back. I just don't think that's how they're set up. But I would like to see him bring back Nick Chubb. Is a total kind of bonus, right? I don't think they know what they're going to get out of Nick. I don't think anybody knows exactly what you're going to get out of Nick. So I think you have to build the room kind of without him and then hope that he turns into Nick Chubb, the Nick Chubb you're so used to having. Ford will be back. He's under contract for another year. I do think you draft a guy, and I don't think it needs to be super high just because it's a running back, but I think third or fourth round, you take a guy that you believe can come in and start, and then you have the rookie, you have Ford, you have Chubb, and if you want to add a fourth guy that's kind of a goal line, a short yardage guy, because I think the Browns struggled in that area when Chubb wasn't out there this year. He was pretty good in that area. They missed Kareem Hunt from a year ago. He was good in that area. He was still good with Kansas City. I don't think Dante Foreman kind of filled that role like they wanted him to. Had some issues. So I could see the makeup being, like you said, Andy, Ford, a young guy, Chubb, and then kind of this fourth veteran guy that is cheap, but gives you some size and some grit.
Foregone conclusion that Foreman and Pierre Strong aren't back. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Strong's a big special teamer. You know, could he stick as a special teamer as your fourth guy when it, you know, when the rosters are cut? I could see that. I think he comes back. I think he spends the offseason on the roster. Now, whether or not he makes the 53 would depend on the rest of the guys. But, yeah, I don't think Foreman comes back.
On Friday, Browns officially announced the re-injure for Deshaun Watson, and it wasn't just a setback. He re-tore the Achilles. I would think he's going to be really hard-pressed to see the football field next year, which would be the fourth year of his contract. Is he ever going to play here again, Scott? And if not, what can the Browns do about maybe trying to get out of this thing or paying him off? Or what? How do you see this thing rolling?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can't say anything for certain right now. He just had surgery, whatever, 4 days ago. But I expect that he has played his last down for the Browns. I think there are just too many factors to overcome. You know, the two ruptured Achilles in 3 months is really difficult. If you restart the recovery clock, you know, and now you're talking – Is he back in October? You know, that feels too late. You come back in October, you miss all the offseason, you miss all the training camp, if that's the way it goes. Where's Deshaun Watson's mindset? You know, is he busting it to get back this year? Is he say, hey, I'm going to take this year and try to get right for 2026? So I think you can assume that he's not going to play this year. And if you make that assumption and it holds true, then you're 80% of the way done with his contract. He hasn't played good football for you since he's been here. You can figure out a way to get out of that contract. And if it's simple as you cut him and take a big cap hit in 2026, that's fine. I think they have the stomach for that. I think they can fit that under the cap as opposed to the $119 million this year. Right? If it's 73 in 2026, they can live with that. It's different than the 119 they would have had to swallow if they cut him in 2025. So, yeah, I think there's ways to get rid of it. I think if he doesn't play this year, they have insurance on him. They can get some kind of cap relief at some point. Now, it's not, you know, it's not this all $73 million, or I don't think it's even all $46 million of the salary cap or the guaranteed contract, but they will get some salary cap relief at some point if he doesn't play and they get the insurance. So I just feel that when he hasn't played for you, then there's no need to bring him back on the field. I think they'll move past that. And then from a contract salary cap standpoint, it becomes doable after the 2025 season.
OC by the end of the week? What do you think? What's your gut tell you?
Yeah, I would think so. To me, Kubiak was the last kind of, not shoot a drop, but the last name out there that I was thinking, okay, is he going to change the scope of this search after those first four guys? And I think once you have him in the building, you know, the other issue, the other guy out there would be a Josh McCown. And I know my buddy Zach Jackson wrote about it, and I had somebody ask me about it in my mailbag, and he's an interesting one. You know, our quarterback coach with the Vikings, obviously played quarterback for 18 years in the league, really well-liked, really well-respected. You know, is he going to be on the radar? Is he somebody, he doesn't have a ton of coaching experience, but I kind of like that idea a little bit. I just don't know if I like it more than, you know, a Kubiak or a Reese or a Bevel. But you could delay it for him, given that they play tonight, and then you got to see where Minnesota stands in the playoffs.
Scott, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Scott Petrek, BrownZone.com, covers the Browns for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Meredith takes your phone calls, 216-474-0092. Menigan flying the ship and texting like crazy. Browns are looking for an offensive coordinator. Clint Kubiak, the latest. He's a young guy, 37 years old.
Well, now you have me intrigued. Who are you texting? Like, what are you doing? Now, I wouldn't sources. Even have thought of
Dan's,
that.
He's texting sources. But you, like, when you don't say who it is.
Yeah, but the thing sources. Is, like, okay, so people are driving
NFL
around.
NFL sources.
So here's what I see. Like, if I'm driving around, I'm listening to our show, and Jeff goes, hey, he's texting like crazy. What's the first thought you have?
He has to pick up milk and bread on the way home?
No, who is he texting? And why is it so important that Jeff's saying this while we're on the air? Again,
Menigan's always working, man.
I know. But
you know that.
So
why we're lucky to have him here.
You're trying to get us information, other good stuff?
You know, sometimes we get some decent information around here every so often that we hint at. You just got to pay attention to what we're saying.
Yeah. I think these three, and I agree with Scott. I threw out Daryl Bevel, Clint Kubiak, Tommy Rees as the three main guys. They also interviewed the quarterback coach from Seattle and tight end coach from the Atlanta Falcons for the OC gig. But I would think that Bevel has a great chance, or is a guy that Stefanski would be really comfortable with. Obviously Kubiak, and Tommy Rees was here this last year. And, you know, you've already heard Tommy Rees's name before Vrabel was even hired in New England. I want to talk about Mike in a minute. But before Mike was even hired in New England, oh, maybe Vrabel will be taking Tommy Rees with him. There's one guy that I think is that can't be overlooked here, and it's Daryl Bevel. He's currently the quarterback coach, pass game coordinator for your Miami Dolphins. And Tua Tagovailoa has made some pretty nice strides under him. Obviously not when it comes to his health, because he still had issues there. But when Tua was healthy, they were doing okay. their pass game situation wasn't good enough to keep Tyreek Hill from saying bye-bye in his mind. Doesn't mean he's going anywhere, but he said, you know, I'm out. Okay, great. But Bevel's interesting. He was with Stefanski in Minnesota for a good length of time and then went to Seattle where he won a Super Bowl. He was there for a long chunk with Pete Carroll. Went to Detroit, went to Jacksonville, and he was also an interim head coach in Detroit and in Jacksonville. But if he comes, let's just say Kevin offers him the job, and he decides, you know what, I want to be the offensive coordinator in Cleveland. You know what could be a factor, Andy?
What, calling plays? You tell me, what's the factor?
A homecoming for Daryl Bevel.
Oh, tell me about it, Jeff.
Daryl is from Arizona.
So far, what's the homecoming?
And he went to college at Northern Arizona and then ended up being a starting quarterback for 4 years at Wisconsin.
Okay.
But he left Northern Arizona because he had to take a two-year mission for his church.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of times you hear, you know, my mission was to Croatia. Mm-hmm. My mission was to Sudan. My mission was to Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl Bevel's two-year mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints
here
was in Cleveland.
Yeah.
From 1990 to 1991. So think back 34 years. If there was a guy who knocked on your door, maybe it was Daryl Bevel.
Maybe.
I made Menigan laugh. My day is complete. Good night, everybody.
It's interesting. His.
See y'all later.
Nice. Did you see who his offensive coordinator was at NAU?
No.
Brett Childress.
Wait, what the hell just happened? He took us off the rails and you yanked us back out. Is this opposite thing?
I just don't like when
Did
he
you
takes
say
us off the
Fred road. Childress?
No.
You say Brad Childress?
I said Brad, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
I always get, you know, when you start bringing up Big Sky Conference or former Big Sky, or yeah, Big Sky Conference teams, it always is intriguing to me.
That's great.
Well, because they throw the ball like crazy in that conference.
Do you think one of these guys... And I'm going to go ahead and say I don't know enough to tell you. Do you think one of these guys is significantly on the outside? Yes, that's the guy you need to hire. I don't. You know, Tommy Reese is supposed to be a young up-and-coming football guru. Ask Nick Saban. That's great. Maybe you give him the job and he becomes your Ben Johnson. Daryl Bevel is 55. He's been around. He's very experienced. He's had some success in the league. Maybe he comes in and does what Jim Schwartz did for the defense. Same type of guy. You know, been around, veteran coach, long time, blah, 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 blah. And Clint Kubiak, maybe he's the next up-and-coming, you know, young offensive guy who's one good offensive year away from becoming a head coach somewhere. I just think Kevin Stefanski needs to figure it out, decide which one maybe best aligns with his ideas about, and not vision necessarily for this is the type of offense I want to run, but he has the same goals for an offense that I have and sees where we want to go with this thing and he can get us there. I Kevin, pick one, let's go. Right?
What's the hurry? I mean, if he thinks they're down to three and that's down to money and they can figure out what they want to do from there, right?
It won't come down to money. Whoever's the leading candidate will get what he wants.
Unless they want to go somewhere else. They don't necessarily.
That could be.
But
sure.
The leading candidate, like, I just think it's weird when you're an offensive coordinator and you're walking into a position, is this offensive coordinator they're going to hire going to call the plays? That's my question. Are you going to call the plays? And
that's a fine question.
If your definition of offensive coordinator to you and an upgrade in what you're doing in this career means that you need to call the plays, then obviously this may not be the spot.
You know,
I want to know what is it going to take for Kevin to say, okay, we're bringing in this guy and we are going to let him call the plays. This is what's important.
I think it comes down to a couple of factors. Number one, Kevin turned over the play calling duties and it went south in a hurry. And the time he turned it over was weird because he called the plays while Deshaun was the quarterback. The minute that Deshaun's not going to be the quarterback, he turns over the play-calling duties to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me wonder, was there a strategy involved? Was there a difference of opinion on who should be the quarterback? I just wonder why that was the time to do it. And then I wonder this, and this to me I think is the biggest picture in the whole thing here. What did Kevin think when he wasn't calling plays?
I think he didn't know what to do with his hands. I think that was part of the problem.
You think that was it?
Yeah, I was like, he's like, should I put my hands in my pocket? Should I start wearing a hoodie so I can put my hands in there? Maybe I should get one of those little quarterback things to keep my hands warm where I can kind of just slide them in there and it hangs on my belt. I just like, Kevin looked lost when he wasn't calling plays.
See, I didn't think so.
He looked like a guy who was trying to figure out what he should be doing.
Well,
I say these from 5-second cutaways that we get from the network.
But by the time the season ended,
yeah,
I wonder if he thought, you know what, I can help.
I can help in
other areas. I liked the freedom to look at other things. I wonder.
I don't know. I wonder what. Did anyone ask him that in the postseason press conference? Like, how did your job change after you quit calling plays? Like, what was your game day responsibility? How did that change?
Well, he was the head coach. That was his game day responsibility.
Okay.
He was overseeing everything. I wonder if he liked it or if he hated it. And he thought, I'm going to call the plays. And that could determine who you get.
I think he's pretty good at calling plays. Like, I don't.
Oh, I think he's real good.
So I don't understand.
I think he's like, really good
for
at
him
it.
To give it up. To me, it sounds like it's an outside factor.
But if you're,
let's see what. Hey, we brought Ken in here. Let's see what Ken can do. Let's give him a shot. Looks like the season's going down the drain anyway. What's the worst case scenario? We lose out and we get a higher draft pick. I like that. Almost feels like what the conversation was in the meeting when he decided to say, "Okay, let's give Ken a shot at calling the plays. Then we'll see what happens."
It and I don't know the answer. I don't know if this is true. I just got the feeling that Dorsey was a shotgun marriage, and you know he was.
From who though?
I don't know.
From who? I can't see Barry giving Stefanski a shotgun marriage.
No, I can't either. But it just didn't feel right. From you know, Alex Van Pelt seemed like they were on the same page and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Daryl Bevel here and you've been an offensive coordinator and you've called plays. Are you going to give up your gig in Miami to come here to not call plays, to be an offensive coordinator again?
No.
I would think not, unless you really want to get out of Miami.
Unless you don't like calling plays.
Unless it's like
being a producer, right?
Right. Well, and then if you're Clint Kubiak, are you going to come here to not call plays? I would think the answer to that is no, because you need to take that next step. If you're Tommy Rees, would you take the promotion to offensive coordinator in the National Football League after being an offensive coordinator at Notre Dame and Alabama because it's an offensive coordinator's gig, even if you're not calling the plays? Yes. He's the one that being the OC and not calling plays might be attractive to.
I'll buy that. I will buy every second of that. I'm not coming here as an offensive coordinator that doesn't get to call plays. Or without the hope of being able to call plays at some point, or maybe shared responsibility throughout the season. Hey, you call the next. You call the next series. Well, I'll call this series. You call that. Especially if they're on the same page, it shouldn't matter too much. That you would think they'd be of one mind. What is it? They're a great thought partner. That's what it is.
I thought you were going Borg.
Oh no!
Going the full Borg on this thing.
I wasn't assimilating. No, not at all. Yeah. I can't do that. I wish Jeff knew what we were talking about. I am Borg. Just so you know.
Paul's an incredible thought partner.
There you go.
More Browns coming up a little later on in the show. Jamel White's going to join us at 1 o'clock. Former Browns running back. Next, the Ohio State Buckeyes against the Fighting Irish from Notre Dame for a national championship 1 week from tonight. 1 week from tonight. I can't wait. Doug LaMaurice from Kings of the North, longtime veteran covering Ohio State. Joining us next, who wins the game and why, with Doug on Baskin and Phelps. Buckeyes, Irish. How about this? Andy, where's Notre Dame?
South Bend.
In what state?
Indiana.
And in, Columbus is where?
About 2.5 hours south.
So it's in the north, right?
Yeah.
Let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Longtime buddy of ours, a tremendous writer, tremendous podcaster, Doug LaMaurice joining us. His podcast, The Kings of the North. And if you go to the homepage, Doug sums it up this way. A national college football show from a northern viewpoint, analyzing and understanding 28 northern teams and fan bases while telling the South to cram it. Doug, that's fabulous.
The North has risen up, guys. They've risen to the challenge. Second straight year.
How about that?
All northern national title game. Like the last 25 years, this is just the third time of an all-North national title game. There have been like 14 all-South national title games in that time, but the worm has turned and the North is here.
Is that because the North pays better on NIL? Why do you think this has happened?
Yeah, well, it's because the South has been paying people all along, but the North tried to follow the rules a little better at least. I'm not saying they never did it. So now all of a sudden, everybody can pay everybody, and lo and behold, look what happened. Plus, 12-team playoff, more opportunity. The South has always gotten the benefit of the doubt in the 4-team playoff when it comes to getting in. Nick Saban, the greatest coach of all time, retired, and it turns out he was propping up a lot of what was going on down there. And the North can compete. Of course, there's still more good players in the South, but the North can get those guys to come up here. And this is the new world. This isn't going to change.
By the way, Nick is great in that commercial when he's the homeowner renting out to people.
Oh, no showers longer than five.
Yeah,
verbal.
That's the rule.
The two sports personalities of all time who have leaned in and made money off perception is Rob Gronkowski being dumb and Nick Saban being grumpy, and they are just printing money in commercials based on that.
Bill Belichick's not too far behind. Well, I don't know how to play out
Bill
with North Carolina.
Bill didn't take it too far, though. He jumped back in. You're right.
Yeah.
Gronk is like, wait a minute, you're going to pay me to act dumb? I'm in. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Although the Tom Brady roast with Bill was outstanding.
That's true.
Like, that was never seen before.
Oh, is one of the reasons that, let's just say Ohio State, maybe Notre Dame, maybe Penn State, are northern schools emulating southern-style football, or is there nothing to that?
Well, I mean, one of the things is, I think, from a skill position standpoint, like the South, if you look, it used to be like sometimes like, oh, man, you look at like those receivers down there, running backs down there. I think the North, you look at what Ohio State puts on the field, you look at a guy like Jeremiah Love at Notre Dame, Nick Singleton and Catron Allen at Penn State, they can hang with any level of that right now. And I do think it was a big deal. Like, this is old time stuff, guys, but like 2007 when Ohio State played LSU in the national championship game, and LSU had these big athletic defensive tackles. And we saw that with Georgia, even in 21 and 22, like these giant guys who can really move. But I think you're seeing that in the North now. Like, what is Tyleek Williams at Ohio State, right? What is Howard Cross at Notre Dame? What was Zane Durant at Penn State? There's just a lot of stuff where you can see maybe previously there were talent edges at various positions that I don't think exist right now. And one of the other things is the South had a really good run of QBs, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa. There's not great Southern quarterbacks on the best teams right now, which means Will Howard and Riley Leonard aren't first-round draft picks, but right now they're absolutely more than good enough to be national championship-winning QBs.
Doug, I want to talk about this North-South stuff, but I also want to ask you this question. Is it possible the entire Ohio State defense, with the exception of Caleb Downs and maybe C.J. Hicks, ends up getting drafted, is it possible that 10 out of the 11 guys that start on defense could end up in the NFL next year? It's unbelievable.
Sonny Styles will still – well, he could go. He could go. Yeah, because he's a third-year guy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with Ohio State, that maybe, like, you look at the team, it's different than the 14 national champs because those guys were all sophomores. They came back for one more year, and then they had the gigantic record-breaking draft class the year after. This could be that now. And maybe there aren't maybe there's not a guy who's going to go in the top 15, right? Mm-hmm. But there are so many guys who are going to go from late first round to the fourth round that you run through. Yeah, of the 11 guys they put out there the most, I don't know that there's anybody who's not an NFL player. right now. And even like a guy like, you know, Ty Hamilton, who's probably the least known starter on the defense.
Right.
You know, his brother, Devon Hamilton, was a third-round pick and has been an NFL player. And Ty is like a incredibly solid defensive tackle who probably will be like a fifth-round pick. So, and then they got top-end dudes. Yeah. This could – I mean, we're going to – if they win this, one of the offseason conversations will be, is this the best Ohio State defense ever?
Yeah. What did Jack Sawyer do for his draft stock with a simple little scoop and score?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the four-year careers, really good careers for Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau, as five-star guys, mm-hmm. had been like really good run defenders, really solid, really reliable, on the field all the time, but probably not elite-level pass rushers the way the Boses and Chase Young were.
Sure.
But like the last 6 weeks, they've been getting so much four-man pressure. You know, that was the key to the win against Oregon, a ton of pressure without having to blitz. And then you beat Texas because your five-star recruit who's been here 4 years just smokes the right tackle on a gotta-have-it play. And that is not what they had always been, but it's what they've been when Ohio State has needed it the last four games. And you start doing that into the body of work, and then it's like, oh, yeah, I'll take that guy.
Doug LaMaurice joining us, the Kings of the North podcast. Doug, if you're Ryan Day and you win the national championship, are you thinking, I am at Ohio State for the next 5 years? Or are you thinking, great, I did it, now I am moving on to something else? Do you think he wants to be at Ohio State long term? And should he be at Ohio State long term? The whole Michigan thing maybe getting in the way? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is like, we're only going to spend 50 hours on this on our show in the offseason.
Yeah,
but
yes. I bet.
I think Ohio State is probably best positioned if there is a new modern dynasty that fills the Alabama gap, fills the brief Georgia gap. I think it's Ohio State. Now, a lot of people would argue with NIL, with the portal, the whole point is you're not going to do that anymore. But for they have quarterback lined up for like the next 5 years with Julian Sain and Ohio kid Tavian St. Clair. Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs are back next year, right? They have a lot of guys in the pipeline. The recruiting is good. The NIL is good. The NIL, like, 18 months ago wasn't. And that was the kind of thing, like, you look at the future, can they compete? They absolutely can compete in recruiting and NIL. And the whole thing for Ohio State in the four-team playoff was getting in. They finished fifth and sixth and seventh constantly. They're always going to be in the playoff. So, you know, people have espoused, like, all the pressure, the Michigan losses. Maybe he goes out on top and says, like, that's it. But I think they could win three of the next five. So can you turn that down, especially with these young QBs they have lined up? So my guess is he stays and really makes a run at potentially, which is crazy to say, the greatest era in Ohio State history. That's the ceiling. That's out there. Can you really turn your back on that? It's stressful. It's stressful, man.
Yes.
You know that. It is.
All right, so let me ask you this, because I think you know this as well as anybody else. What is the psyche of the Ohio State football fan right now? Because, you know, I drove in today, and, man, I'm still feeling good about the scoop and score. Still feeling good about Oregon. Still feeling good about Tennessee. I put Michigan in the rearview mirror when they came back out on the field. Right? And yep. And so I put that in the rearview mirror. But, like, I'm listening to our morning show this morning, and, you know, Anthony Lyman spent a lot of time at Ohio State. He's, like, sitting there talking about, well,
some of it even in class.
Yeah. He's like, if they lose to Notre Dame, that could be worse than Michigan. I'm like, oh, my God, get out of your own way. Come on, this has been an amazing run. Do I expect them to beat Notre Dame? Yeah, I do. But I also expect it to be a good game. It is the national championship.
So I just, like, it's two almost totally separate things. And I think the point with the Michigan loss is not that the national title chase erases it. It doesn't undo it. It doesn't make up for it, but it makes you forget about it for now. So will Ohio State fans be thinking about it next November, even while they're wearing their national championship T-shirts potentially? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to be thinking about it a ton. How have we lost four straight to Michigan? That's what they'll be thinking.
Right.
But right now, I mean, I have a direct – we have a thing where I can directly communicate with a lot of Ohio State fans. Their process was some people were kind of over it by Monday after the Michigan loss, some people needed the playoff bracket to come out. Some people needed the first game against Tennessee. Some people needed the Oregon game. I think there are very few, 5% at most, who right now are really thinking about it. But it doesn't absolve it, right? So I keep saying the Michigan pursuit, that's a heart conversation. The playoff, the 12-team playoff, what's our seed? Who are we playing? That's a head conversation. That's your brain. So like that, that's where they are. But it doesn't mean that when they get to May, they won't be like, oh, man, I can't believe we're 0-4 against Michigan. Both can be true. But right now, they are all having a good time. A lot of them were out on day after Michigan. But they are all back and saying, let's go win this thing.
Do they win it?
Not guaranteed, but they have more than Notre Dame. So I thought Notre Dame... I picked Notre Dame when the bracket came out to make the national title game. I was very, very confident that Notre Dame would beat Georgia. I actually thought Penn State had more talent, and that game early, I was like, yeah, Penn State's going to out-talent them. That Texas made Ohio State grind a little bit. Notre Dame can make you grind. So I think simultaneously the Ohio State win over Texas, so how tough that was, and that Ohio State had to fight, should make Ohio State and its fans even more confident, because it wasn't easy, they weren't perfect, and they still won. But it should also make Notre Dame more confident, because if Ohio State is just going to drop 40 on you because nobody can cover Jeremiah Smith, that's tough for Notre Dame. If you can get in a meat grinder a little bit, then Notre Dame can hang. I haven't made a pick yet. I probably will pick Ohio State, but I would advise any Ohio State fans to not take Notre Dame for granted. Because the fact that they are here at all when they're down like 8 starters due to injury is pretty amazing. And that is a tight, tough team. But Ohio State has more dudes.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, fellas. Always fun.
Doug LaMaurice, Kings of the North podcast, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.